Well, let me kind of start off with, you have an interesting accent. Do you mind if I ask where you are from?
I don't mind at all, and it's a bit of a hybrid because I was born and raised in England, and then I spent a lot of time backpacking around Australia, and then I came to America. So it's kind of a hybrid, and I still bounce around those three countries, so it's a bit of a hybrid depending on where I am.
Very cool. My parents are South African, so I was like, it's not a tinge of that, but I was like, it's sort of similar.
It's not a tinge of that, but I've just spent the past year filming in South Africa. I love it. Whereabouts are they from?
So my dad is from, like, farms outside of Joburg, and then my mom is from Swaziland.
I was in Swaziland! Oh my god, that's so cool!
Wow, really? That's, like, so that's so cool. They're usually blocked off because of malaria. That's amazing.
We got our malaria pills. I spent a lot of time in Africa, and I never, ever go without those malaria pills. And I know you hear of people still getting it, but for me it's like, no, not getting it, I'm taking the pills.
Well, I've got to ask, since I've noticed on your career that as far as documentaries and also your editor, Mark Zambrano, that you guys have done Africa before. How did you get attached to this subject matter in Bill Coors? How did this switch happen?
Yeah, it was, I have to say, this film came to me. There's so many extraordinary circumstances that attached me to this film. I have a consulting company alongside my film production company, which I've had for many, many years, and I've loved helping new and emerging filmmakers, mostly. But I got a cryptic email from Bill's attorney, who's a woman, Natalie Winnegar, and she said that they have been trying to make a documentary about Bill, and they've had some challenges with two production companies that didn't work out, and would I have some time for them? So we arranged to speak, and on the phone it was his attorney and his biographer, also a woman, which I loved. Very progressive, that Bill. And the three of us just got along like a house on fire, and I said, okay, ladies, what's going on? And they told me. So basically one company threw the towel in because it was just such a massive project, and the other one, it was creative differences. And so I said, look, here's what I would do with it, just as a consultant. Here's what I would do with it. I told them everything that I would do, how I would lay it out, how I would tell it. I said, I think that's what you need to do. But find a production company and a director who can do that for you if that's what you like. And what I didn't know is that they were emailing to each other while we were on the phone. And they both said at the same time, well, why don't you do it? I said, okay, well, that's a big giant yes for me. I knew nothing about the Coors family. I'm not a beer drinker. I'm a wine drinker. And just listening to his story, you truly could make a documentary out of every 3 or 4 years that man's been alive. He's just such an extraordinary man. But I think what I connected to more than anything was that his tenacity in coming back after tragedies that you and I couldn't even conceive of bouncing back from, maybe one or two of them, and he had a litany of tragedies that he bounced back from. And he didn't know that he was suffering from depression, which it was, you know, was back then, because it didn't have a name. And so for him to go on this 25-year journey that he went on, looking for ways in which to manage this situation, while dealing with this enormous tragedy in his background, and then come out of it and change world history twice. That's just the kind of man that he is. And my only worry about doing the film was, am I going to do him justice? Can I bring all these elements that speak to me about this man in a way that presents him to a world that can learn from what he went through? Then it would be worth me taking it on. And that was my biggest challenge with it. But that's how it came to me initially. It came to me as a consulting project.
Wow, that's amazing. So I want to jump straight to that depression element of the film, because I think one of the key elements that I love about the film is that you interviewed a lot of young people specifically about what they feel depression is, and some of the most powerful elements were hearing from them about what they have gone through, and then you connect it beautifully, obviously, through revealing Bill's, you know, tragedies over the decades and his struggles. Where did you get the idea for the way you shot this documentary? How did you come up with that idea?
Okay, that's a great question, Carly. So, what I started with was Bill's speech in 1981 to the Academy of, I call it the Academy of Overachievers, but the American Academy of Achievers, I felt that even though that was given in the 80s when it was time, you know, it was like, get as much money as you can, me, 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 Bill was actually giving them advice to, no, follow your passion, follow your heart, and you'll be fine. Money's a good thing, it's not the thing. So I know how much he impacted those lives, and to make this film relevant, because his journey basically, I think, is more crucial for kids that are going through this today than at any other time, because he's so relevant now. He's still so forward-thinking. But I thought, if I could take that treatment and sort of make this documentary a learning tool as well as a fascinating biography, I think I will have been able to get the kids to come and watch it. And, you know, look, it's the selfie generation, right? So I knew I had to put the kids in it. I say kids. They're like late teens, early 20s. I knew I had to put them in it. My challenge was twofold. One was, would Bill be open to that? It's not his biography. It doesn't sort of play in. But to have these kids be able to see themselves on screen today and realize nothing has changed in the last 100 years. What they are challenged with now at school and the emotions that they're feeling now at school and in college is exactly what Bill felt, you know, 90 years ago. So something has to change. We're not doing our kids a service in the schooling system this way. So I thought it was relevant for right now, and this is actually luck more than anything in terms of being timely, is that, you know, it's an amazing immigration story. The fact that Bill's grandfather stowed away on a ship from Germany as a 14-year-old to come to America and establish the Coors Brewery, right? So I was trying to pull in all of the elements that make it teen to teen and at the same time not make it preachy. I never wanted to speak for them. I wanted them to say how, because I spoke to Amy, she's the British girl. I was at lunch before I had her interview and I sat down with her and Kieran, also British, who struggle enormously with depression and anxiety and stress disorder. And I asked them, I said, what makes it that you know it's a problem? Because, you know, we all have stress and we all have anxiety. Why are you guys so attached to being, that this is what it is for you, and that maybe this could be normal? And they said, both of them said together, because it's debilitating. We don't get out of bed for a week. And I thought, my goodness, this is stunning to me. It's not something I related to. I didn't have that same journey. But I thought, if these kids who, when you get them on a good day, are vivacious, creative, and talented, then how many other kids who you think, looking around this classroom, are fine, are not fine? So now you've got immigration with Bill's grandfather coming over. You have mental health issues, which have caused all the shootings in the schools. You know, ultimately that comes back to mental health issues. We're not seeing these kids, right? They're not seen. They don't feel heard. So, I mean, it's my on the sidelines is what I say. Those kids just want attention, right? They want to be remembered for something. And if they don't do this, they won't be remembered for anything. And so you have that element to it. And then you have, well, how do I manage this stress? You know, I don't want to be on pills my whole life, or I don't want to hide in the dark corner. You know, how did somebody else do it? And of course, Bill has the most incredible story because of what he came back from. Nobody will be able to say, like, oh, yeah, I got that, check, check, check. You know, after two or three of his tragedies, you think, I want to listen to what this man has to say, because he turned his life around. He came back from these tragedies, and he made something incredible out of it. So I wanted to make it something that was relevant and not just a 100-year journey of one man. I wanted to make it timely, so that's why I brought them in. I wasn't sure if their stories would be relevant. And if you watched it, Gadi, you'll see that they start off very small screen. Because I sort of want to throw the audience off by saying, hey, what is this? I'm confused. But by the end of the film, they're full screen, and you realize, oh, wait, this is exactly the same journey that Bill went on 100 years ago. Something has to change. So I've had incredible responses from kids, from teens and the early 20s who've watched this, tears, asking, you know, I want all my friends to see this. So I know it hits those notes with those kids. Does that answer your question?
Definitely, and I just want to say thank you for that, because it pulled me in immediately. You know, I'm not as young as they are, but being someone who's involved in social media, their stories were so timely and pertinent, and I was afraid that we would be, you know, we'd be looking into the past with Bill's story, and it immediately became a story of right now, and Bill's, like you said, it's a story for this generation as much as it is past generations.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Guardian. I'm so glad that you connected with it. I do think when I handed the first cut in, I honestly thought Bill was going to fire me. I thought, you know, the cast of the family would just fire me. Like, that's not what we wanted. And in true Bill McCord fashion, he embraced it, loved it, and we went with it. You know, it was I didn't have to fight at all on that, which was, again, such a testament to him. I've only known him obviously a couple of years. He just turned 102 3 weeks ago, and he has changed my life. It just every time I watch it, I learn something new, or something that I learned from him hits me even deeper. It just has that, for me, it just has that power to it. He's so authentic, you know?
So I've got to ask the crazy coincidence of, so you open with an Einstein quote, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. That, you know, that ties in, and, you know, love, and I get that. And then, boom. Bill knew Einstein. He was right on campus with him. How serendipitous was all of the research for you? I feel there's so many connections. His wanting to go to Princeton rather than, you know, his dad's legacy at Cornell, and then his son choosing Stanford instead of the East Coast. I mean, there seems to be a really serendipity to Bill's tale, I guess.
So I love that. I wouldn't have thought of Einstein had I not known that Bill met him at school. So that was my first foray into it. And then I just started thinking, well, how do I open this film, tie that in, and also make it relevant to the film? And this film to me is not, I've heard people say like, oh my gosh, this is such an uplifting film about mental health and suicide prevention. I was thinking it was going to be, you know, well, not what it was. And so for me, this film is about love. It's very thematically, Bill did not receive love from his parents. It was a very strict upbringing, as was typical of the day. And so he didn't know what love was. And when he was a parent, when he grew up to be a husband and a father, he didn't know how to give love because he was never taught. And then ultimately, it was self-love that saved him. So I wanted to find a quote that was relevant to the film that dealt with love in not an airy-fairy kind of way, but a more authentic, you know, you flash back to the Beatles, all you need is love. And back then it's sort of like, oh yeah, that's so great, poppy, poppy. But they were onto something, and I don't want to come off and sound like, you know, love is the answer, but if we could choose love instead of hate or anger or hurt in any of our daily dealings with people, we would live a more stress-free life just from that alone. And I learned that from Bill, and so I really wanted to open the film and like, this film is going to have elements of love, and I want you to read this so that you are prepared for it. Subliminally or not, this is what's coming at you. It's ultimately a film about love. So that's how I came up with that.
Very cool. One of the lines that kind of blew me away was when Scott's talking about the drive he had where he came out to Bill, and Bill's response, I think, is one of the more profound moments in the movie, because it's a form of love, but in a very, he gave it to his son in a very business-like moment. There's 10% of the population's gay, so why are you crying? I think that line alone kind of hit me in a way I never expected the story to go. How powerful was it in talking to Scott about being so honest and open during his interviews, but also to get that moment on screen? That must have been really special.
Okay, you are brilliant at what you do. You have picked up on something that, for me, makes this film. So when I first agreed to do it, I was told that Scott did not want to be in the film. Nothing negative about it. He was really busy at the time with his companies. And I handed the first cut in, and the family obviously watched it. And I got a little email, a really nice email from Scott saying, I love this film. It said, Tyler, I'd love to, you know, offer up my insight. And I called him and I said, I'm on a plane in 2 days to come and interview you. And he laughed and said, great, I'm here. So I flew to Colorado. He was my longest pre-interview. And I think he was sizing me up. We hadn't met before. He hadn't made a film before. And, you know, could he trust me? There's a lot of elements into it, which I always understand going into it. I'm sure you do too, right? People want to know, like, oh, are you going to slam my film? Are you going to slam me? I had to sort of overcome that with him. And I think why, at that point in time, I had just lost my soulmate from my whole life, and he was my uncle, and he was gay, and the first gay man in my life, but he was such an extraordinary man. It was such a huge loss to me. I had just come back, he's in Australia, and I just come back from spending that last month with him, and I shared that with Scott before I asked Scott to share anything with me. Not that it was a story, it might have been a little bit too emotional to lead with, but I was so raw at that point and open. I think that's what Scott responded to. It wasn't, I think, on his part something of whether he should reveal this in the film. He just talked to me about coming out to his dad. And then we talked about how hard it is for kids to come out today, and is it easier? And we both think it is slightly easier, but it's still an issue, which we don't think it should be. And so I said, would you share that with me on film, you know, on camera? And he said, he sort of was like, maybe. And I said, that was a yes to me, right? Yeah, maybe is a yes. It's only not a no. Anyway, I did the interview with him, and I just saved that. I saved that to the very end and said, you know, would you talk to him? By then, he was comfortable with me. And off of that, and he shared that fantastic story, which ends up being a funny story. He was like, is my dad going to careen off the road down the Colorado mountains when he hears this? You know, is he going to embrace it? And in pure Bill, practical fashion, he's like, what are you crying for? 10% of the world is gay. It's just absolutely Bill, inside and out. Like, you know, and Scott said after the fact, he worried for years about coming out because he was the heir apparent, you know. Have you come out to your father, who also pretty much single-handedly saved calls from the brink of bankruptcy and coming back, you know, and stronger than ever. So that was a pivotal moment for me. And I love that Scott agreed to be in it because it makes the film personal, and it took it out of voyeurism and brought it into From the Inside Out, which I've shared with Scott. And he's, I think, really happy to have made that decision to be a part of the film.
Another kind of interview that stuck out to me that I wasn't expecting was the gentleman who had worked with him for 40 years and was the catalyst for...
Oh, John Ortiz.
Yes.
Yeah, John Ortiz.
Can you talk about interviewing him? Because we immediately see his passion for Bill and the fact that he brings up that this isn't your typical relationship of a boss and a worker, but also the fact that this worker went to the extent of trying to honor his boss with the Patriot Act. I've never heard of anything like that. That's so profound. That had to have been a great moment to kind of have insight in knowing that Bill was a great man, but he was even great in just the way he practiced his business and his own success. It wasn't even just about being successful at Coors. It was he wanted to connect with his people, and that's so different than, you know, his grandfather or his dad, for sure.
So, for sure, that was a vital, I think, interview, because that relationship to Bill and to John was incredibly powerful, and it was something that I think showed two things. The longevity of a friendship like that. You know, if you watch the film, I hope one of the takeaways is that Bill didn't see you as a title. He didn't care what your title was. He saw you as the person that you were, so he would take you on those terms. And I think that's what John portrays so well in his interview. He explains that. And that Bill was there for his when his dad died, you know, when he got married, when his mum died. That's the kind of man that Bill is. He always looked out for his employees, way ahead of any other company. I mean, it's kind of standard now that a lot of companies, you sign up and you get a gym membership. That's good for you, that's good for them. But back then, Bill built a gym for his employees so that they would be healthy and have somewhere to, that didn't cost them anything. And I think that all plays into what, you know, John shares. That he wanted to give back, and how do you give back to somebody who has such privilege that would be meaningful? And that was John's way of thanking Bill for his many, many years of friendship. He wanted to give him something he couldn't buy. It was something he had to earn. Oh my gosh, I feel like I'm parroting the film now, but it landed for me as strongly as it did for you, that takeaway. It was a really authentic and honest way to share their friendship as well as Bill's expertise at Coors.
One of the interesting moments is when we do dive into the history of his first wife and the deaths of his first children. One thing that he it was really interesting. He doesn't use the word suicide, I don't think. In fact, he just says that for like Missy when she jumped, like there it was still ambivalent to, I think. the whole notion of suicide. It was fascinating the way he explained the loss of his children. Like, it wasn't, I don't know, was there any connection to the way he explained things and how their losses were impactful to him, but on a very different level than most people. I think you could have made a much, you know, darker element to the story, but he explained it in such a more enlightening way that, you know, he got past, I think, the darkness of it pretty quickly, even though he dealt with it for you know, multiple decades.
A couple things on that. If you watch him after he talks about the death of his 24-month-old son, his first son, I think that says everything. It's not his words, it's watch him. As he has a photographic memory, so after he says, I think he has to explain almost with a great deal of distance between, it's not his emotion, he's not saying this is how it was for me, he's sort of like very practical, okay, this happened. But if you look at him while he's, and we stay on him, that's his pain, that's how he shows you. His daughter, Missy, I know there were so many challenges with her and her bipolar. He doesn't say suicide with Missy. He does say suicide with his grandfather, because the newspapers printed, you know, Adolf caused leaks to his death. And how Bill references that is that there was some talk that it might have been suicide. It's distant, you know, it's not his feeling. He doesn't tap into his feeling when he talks about them, and I have to say, I can't blame him. It's a little bit more removed, and that's his way of dealing with it by still talking about it, not burying it per se, but also not wanting to feel those emotions as rawly as they were felt at that time. I just hope that people will look at his reaction after he's shared some information to see how he genuinely feels, because he wears it. You know, when he talks about Norman Hatch, then he says about that feeling that started in his feet and just rose up through his body, and then it was an uncontrollable sorrow that he could not hold in. He was so overwhelmed, he burst into tears, and he was so ashamed. And I just thought, wow, what a snapshot from the past, where, yes, you would be ashamed if you cried. And now we encourage kids to cry, because it's just an emotion. If you're feeling bad, cry, and not to put so much judgment on it. You know, he's been around for 102 years. There's parts of Bill that just won't change. It's who he is. And then there's this massive progressive part to Bill that will embrace change. I think this is the bridge for him. This is how I felt. This is how I can share it with you. I, the filmmaker, can bring in elements to make it real and show you pictures, and then let's deal with how do we prevent that from happening in this film. So, does that answer your question?
Definitely, and I've got to ask, how much time did you get to spend with Bill leading up to the interviews? Carrie, are you still there?
Yes. Oh, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah.
Sorry. Did I drop out? Yeah, a funny story about that. At the same time that I had lost my uncle, you know, who was my soulmate, who I mentioned earlier, I had fallen madly in love with somebody that it was just never going to work. It totally just was not going to work, but I still was feeling the feeling. And I held Bill's hand, and he wanted to hear about the whole thing. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've learned so much about love during this process. Maybe Bill has the answer to me to move me forward through this crazy, you know, relationship. And so I tell him everything. And then he waits and he looks at me, and I'm waiting for these pearls of wisdom that I've never heard before. And he said, Carrie, plenty more fish in the sea. I just think that's fantastic. I was waiting for this just life-altering, you know, road to move ahead. And it made me laugh. And again, that is Bill. So how much time did I spend with him? Nowhere near enough. But I'm really, really grateful that I get to spend these past 2 years with him. And I hope another 2 years, because I want to celebrate his 103rd birthday next August.
Well, I love that I love the line at the end that he's hoping to make 124. So let's shoot for that rather than 103. I'd love to ask about his bringing up his 11th commandment, and that being a part of that speech, but also something that I think can stand alone on itself. How wild is it to hear someone come up with that's this type, you know, he's a business, you know, and he's huge in the industry, and yet he comes up with something so simple and so sweet. That's I've never heard of that, anything like that, from someone of that stature. That was, I was blown away by the 11th commandment, and it was something very internal and very, you know, you have to love yourself. That's key number one.
So I think you've just hit on the essence of Bill, right? That his really is in his simplicity. He doesn't look for complicated solutions or answers. That's not what it is. There's a simple, effective solution that Bill goes for in all things. You know, how do I honor my employees? How do I make them feel better about being at work? Let's give them a gym. Let's build a gym. Let's give them a health facility. Let me share that worked for me. So when I first heard it, I just sat there thinking, wow, honor thyself, love thyself. That is the 11th commandment. That's fantastic. I thought it might upset some people. You know, true story, I thought there's maybe some religious elements that wouldn't embrace it. But then I thought, no, you know what? If they watch the film and they see who Bill is and really see through to his authenticity, they're going to understand why he said it. And for me, it was, again, it comes back to that initial quote, right, which Einstein said, love is that unexplained element in the air that can solve everything. And so it just made sense to me, and I wanted to have it very early on in the film.
Well, it's something special, and I was so pleased to see it. I've got to ask, with documentary filmmakers, that the passion in making a film is so deep, and I think with every project, the filmmaker changes in some aspect. How would you say you have changed personally from this experience, and has it impacted your next steps as far as what you're doing with filmmaking?
Oh, great question. It absolutely changed me. It changed me about how I thought about love, and that isn't just a romantic love. It's just love, and how we're so conditioned to say, I love you, therefore you must love me back. But you're opening yourself up for expectation and hurt. If you just love in a one-way fashion, and it's meant to be, that love will come back to you, whomever the person is. It's a friend or a lover or whomever. It seems like such a simple thing, but when you get caught up, I was caught up in the death of my uncle, this relationship I was in, you know, it's very easy to get confused. I think a lot of the kids talked about it, you know, maybe not on screen, but they talked about how this infatuation is overwhelming, that it can, you know, you would do the concept that you would do anything for someone because you love them. And it's absurd. And so Bill says in the film about how you break down love, right? You break down it to its core elements. So again, his simplicity, it's so easy then to bring that into your life and take a beat in a situation and say, you know, what am I really feeling here? And you know what I can do right now? I can just send love, just quietly send love out to, in that direction, to the earth. And I do that now, and I didn't do that before the film. It has impacted me enormously. And how has it impacted me as a filmmaker on my next project? You mentioned the word passion. I never start a project I'm not passionate about. And my passion project that I put aside so that I could do the Bill Cause movie was called Breaking Their Silence, Women on the Frontline of the Poaching War, which is why I've just spent the last year in Africa, as we mentioned earlier, interviewing the most incredible women who literally broke their silence in ways I could never have imagined. And I'm humbled by it, and I'm excited to bring it to the screen. But I do want to say this, because I don't think this is said enough. My editor, Mark Zambrano, and I also brought in another editor, Tom Wong, at the end, just to give Mark a break and get a little bit of clarity on, you know, at the end of the very film. But Mark Zambrano and I, we were in the edit bay for like 12, 14 hours because there was a time limit, not time limit, but more, we felt that clock ticking. Bill was 100, you know, and although he's strong, we wanted this film to be out and ready for him. So we did put in the hours. It was definitely a labor of love. And Mark never once complained. And I think editors don't get anywhere near as much credit as they should, because without, you can be as good a director as you want. If you don't have an amazing editor, you're never going to get your vision on the screen. And Mark worked with me so beautifully. And I was lucky enough to find a new editor on Breaking Their Silence. So we worked exactly the same way. His name is Felipe Vargas, and he's very young, and I think he's going to be somebody to watch. So the film, like I say, it it changes my life even now. We were just at a film festival the weekend, and I love to watch people watch it. And there's always tears, there's always laughter, and then the conversation afterward, I learn from the conversations, you know, whether it's suicide prevention, whether it's the excitement about, you know, what Bill did in his life, just from a biography perspective. So, yeah, I intend to be changed and affected by this film for many, many years to come.
So you're still going to festivals, but this October you guys do have a theatrical release. So I'd love to know your opinions on that. But also, is there any hopes of turning this into like maybe an hour version or hour and a half version that can be showcased on public broadcasting or through schools or universities showcasing or anything like that?
Yes. So we did get, we had 5 offers for worldwide distribution, which was just so gratifying. We went with who we thought was the best fit for this film and what they were willing to do with us to, not, you know, to promote it and get it out there. So in New York, it opens October the 5th at, I believe, Manhattan Cinema Village, I believe. And then we're having a sort of premiere in Santa Monica on October the 12th, where it opens at the Lamley on 2nd Street in Santa Monica. And then it goes to Seattle, Denver, and Chicago. We do have a release date for the video on demand and DVD. I believe it's November the 15th right now. In terms of cutting it down, yes, we have a second life for the film, which is going to be purely educational. It's going to go to campuses and colleges across first the country and then the world. And there's already people in China that want it on their curriculum, and you know, the UK, etc. So when we told Bill that we'd need to cut it down to an hour long for it to fit that format, he said he'd be absolutely happy to do that later in the year, and that he only wanted me to do it, which I thought was huge and flattering. So yes, it will get cut down at some point. And that the film festival I mentioned just now, that was our last film festival. So at the beginning of the year, I had just signed us up for some, so they were running out. You never know when you're gonna get an offer, so that kind of thing. So that was the last one.
Very cool. Well, I can't wait to see what people's reactions. I know I was blown away by it. I didn't expect to be as moved as I was, and I do want to bring up, I love you brought up your editor, the way you edit the film and the way you reveal the story. Please keep doing that type of difference in film, because this isn't your typical documentary feel. I guess the kind of the last question is, can you share a little bit more about your next project? I think it's a subject matter that people probably have no idea about. And as far as who these women are and what they've done, I think their story is may change the world, what they're doing.
Oh, Gaudi, thank you so much for wanting to open up that conversation, because it could have been more timely with the hashtag MeToo, the Million Woman March. I'm a huge animal advocate. I always have been, and I was invited to Save the Elephant fundraiser downtown LA, and I went not having any idea how close to extinction elephants, rhino, pangolin, lions, leopards, cheetahs, etc. are. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I'm an advocate and I had no idea how dire this was, then how could mainstream, you know about it? And I have to do something. So I was in Africa researching for my nonprofit, which is Over and Above Africa, and I was only meeting men. And I was fortunate enough to meet a woman who ran a game reserve, and I said to her, are there no women in this space? I just find that so hard to believe. And she said, oh my gosh, there's so many women, incredible women, risking their lives every day, and they do it for no money, basically, and they do it for to prevent these animals from going extinct. And I said, I want to meet them, I want to film them. So that was the initial depth of
okay.